The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Friends, welcome back one more time to Afternoons with Mike. It is my joy to have once again Dave Zanotti on the line with me. And Dave, we are here today to talk about things that are going on in the country, in particular with an article that was released, and it's catching the attention of people on both sides of the aisle politically. As I read this article, I've never seen anything quite like it. So that's what we're here to discuss. So let me officially and warmly welcome Dave Zanotti to my show.
Hi, Mike, and it's always a wonderful opportunity to be on with you. Again, I say it every time on my wife's favorite afternoon radio program in Orlando.
Well, I appreciate that, and it is such an honor to hear you say that every time, and it is meaningful, and I want you to know that. You know, when you and I have talked about a lot of things, everything from American policy to the Constitution to the election, and during that election cycle, I was privileged to have you on 3 days in a row prior, on the day of and on the day after, looking at the ramifications of what happened. And I had a halfway understanding glimpse as to what was going on. But then now, 2 months later, this Time Magazine article comes out by a writer by the name of Molly Ball. I never heard of Molly Ball before. I have a feeling she's going to be very well known after this one. She comes out and it's almost like nothing that I had thought I knew, the proportion of which I thought I knew. I was not even close to what was going on. It was like, oh, what? You've got to be kidding me.
Great place to start this conversation, Mike, because we've been in the mission field of public policy now for 41 years. Mm. And you would think spending that much time there, and I've been with this organization, with the American Policy Roundtable, and the founding work of the Public Square Radio Network, a media network now, for 36 years. Now, you would think, and my first political campaign that I was involved in was 1976. You would think, that I would know what's going on in American politics. I mean, because if I didn't, really, what am I doing here, right? And we've got a small team of highly dedicated full-time missionaries to America that work with us at the American Policy Roundtable. And all of them have between 10 and 40 years of service in this field. So what Molly Ball's article actually does is it pulls back the cover to give us a look at how a presidential election and related elections around it actually work today. And it is a introduction, I would say, to a master's class course that could take hours and hours and hours of research. We're going to try to condense this into as few paragraphs as possible today. But what I want to affirm to you is that studying this article, if someone were to take this article from Time Magazine, and it's interesting because let's start with the title and then we'll go to the writer and the owner. But let's do this. Let's start with the fact that it's Time Magazine. Time Magazine is owned by Mark Burnioff. Mark Burnioff is an American businessman who founded Salesforce, which is an enterprise cloud computing company. Hmm. He is estimated worth somewhere north of $8 billion. Mm-hmm. And he owns Time Magazine. Now, the first thing this tells us is that we're talking about the Wall Street media of America. American media in the last 30 years has changed completely. We are now dealing with, by and large, media that is either owned by billionaire individuals or by multi-billionaire Wall Street publicly traded conglomerates. And this is the nature of media in the United States, whether it's an online magazine, a print magazine, the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, Disney, Comcast, NBC, National Amusement, CBS, AT&T, CNN, these are all conglomerate mechanisms that exist for their own purposes to serve their shareholders. And by and large, the concept of reporting the news is no longer anchored to the idea of the First Amendment freedom of the press, which is to act as an accountability agent where vestiges of power are unveiled to the public so the public can learn, understand, and protect itself from powerful factions. The media now is the powerful faction. And this is very important. The first thing we have to understand, this is not a conspiracy conversation. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is simple reality. This is the way American media is. And it is not what it was in the 1950s and the 1960s. It has changed significantly. It has changed dramatically. It has changed completely. So this is the first thing to understand. The platform of the conversation, we're dealing with the Wall Street media, and we're dealing with Time Magazine, owned by a multi-billionaire who is slugging it out, if you will, with Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who owns the Washington Post, and the Sulzberger family that owns the New York Times. And these are all big publicly traded companies. Okay, so that's the first thing. It's Time Magazine and the writer, Molly Ball. Molly Ball is a graduate of Yale University, 2001. And she has made a career as a journalist. Mm-hmm. She worked for The Atlantic magazine, which is without a doubt the most liberal publication in America. It is designed. It goes back to the 1850s, and it's designed to be the forum of the American mind. But what it really is now is the forum of the American leftist mind. Now, in Atlantic tradition, Molly Ball wrote an article that is a million words in length for Time Magazine, because that's what The Atlantic does. See, when they're going to give you their big expose, the first thing they do is overwhelm you with the volume of it. That's the first thing they do. And it's important to note that this article that's been posted online has already been edited a few times and is likely to be edited multiple times again. It's supposed to be the cover story for the February 15th edition of 2021 of Time. It's important that people go now and get this article online. It's called The Shadow Campaign, and that's the headline that will get you there. It's actually The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign that Saved the 2020 Election. That's the title published now, but very good chance it will change. It will change. And content will change. So what's important, when you get it, screenshot it or print it. Because in today's media, when you print an article, it's not over till it's printed. But if the online survives the written article, it may be edited many, many times going forward. And they may change the story on us here. So that's important to know. Next, the reason that Molly Ball writes in volumes is because in this disclosure, her goal is to keep you from reading the whole thing because she wears you out.
That's really true. That is really true.
Atlantic is famous for that. So they want to basically take the non-readers and the non-professionals out of this. So this is a piece that is written with a message. This is to the inside crowd. Now, one other point on background. This is not at all unusual. This happened in 2008 and 2012. When the Obama administration and the Obama campaign brought to the forefront some of the highest tech work that we had ever seen before in an election, utilizing data research, marketing concepts. For example, the Obama administration knew what they were after so well in recruiting voters that they were actually purchasing the information from your cable company as to what you watched on television the night before. They were able to secure deals with for-profit cable corporations. The campaign bought your box top data. So they were able to analyze who was watching what shows and by that use portals through social media to try to find people to talk to you about issues they thought you would respond to that would relate to their campaign. And then eventually they sent a volunteer to your door to talk with you about that issue and why you wanted to support Barack Obama. Now, in case you think I'm making this up, we have verified this at every level, from experiential to practical, and in the MIT Review, the technical review magazine that MIT puts out, the Obama people published one of these very lengthy articles which detailed all of this. It was in a number of media sources that we have on file, the 2008 campaign tech strategy and the 2012 campaign tech strategy. And they announce it, shout it from the rooftops. Now, how many people purchased the MIT Tech Review publication or the Columbia Journalism monthly publication? I do. We do. And that might be like one, you know.
That's about it.
Right. So for this to go out into, so it is not uncommon for the tech giants and the victors to take take their victory lap. And so Molly Ball has some connection into the empire that elected Joe Biden. And she has been selected to be the person to tell the narrative for the general public or those who are willing to read like 10 pages in Time Magazine. And Time Magazine was selected. It doesn't mean that the article is true. What it means is she was granted access and she reported the story as she was told the story.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we have to do is to work to substantiate that, which we're working on right now ferociously with four people, and it is massively time consuming. So my point is, if you read this article, what you're going to discover is that American politics ain't what Lincoln thought it was,
right,
anymore. It's all changed. We're in a whole new world. And it's been changing continually. And now, if you want to understand what's really happening, you can read this article, but then it's going to create a serious number of questions. And let me make sure we understand one key factor in all of this. We are sold the non-real proposition that American politics is driven by the political parties. This is not true. Period. Stop. End of discussion. This is no longer true. American politics is not driven by the political parties. This particular article will show you that the Democrat Party had almost nothing to do with the election of Joe Biden. And it will show you everyone who did the work, none of whom were parts of the Democrat Party.
That in itself is such an amazing difference over what I think most people, their mindset would be, that this is all politics and politics are the breakdown between the two parties or the third party if you're an independent. But you're right. This is an expose that is crediting a couple of individuals, endowed individuals financially, without a doubt. But then they expand the brush of this on the canvas of what happened. This thing they call the secret campaign, a shadow campaign, rather. Oh, yeah, it is a secret, and it was definitely in the shadows. It was a shadow campaign that, according to what Molly paints out, was a ever-widening circle of people and organizations and businesses and even philosophies, if you will, whether or not it's Republican or Democrat thinkers, were all joining together. And here's the thing that so shocked me, to just come out and to act like all of the people that voted for Trump were actually, according to what you're reading, was actually a misnomer, and the great majority of America was voting for the Democrats in this election. And that's at the, you have to kind of like, I like what you said, you have to pull back the cover to see that that's just really not true. That's what they're telling us. But even statistics, that there was one point of hypocrisy, it seemed to me in the article, would be this one guy who began to warn everybody that Trump's numbers were growing and this thing's getting concerning. And sure enough, he did win Florida and a few other states that but he acted like this was all part of what I expected. And all of this is to save the nation from the evils of this man in particular. That's what's amazing.
And Molly is not quite that honest, because she, the premise of her article is that all that happened in all of this extraordinary, quote, extraordinary shadow effort was designed to protect the election.
Yes.
And and interchangeably with the election, to protect democracy. So their goal was to protect the election and to protect democracy. Now, that's what they're selling us as their justification, to protect the election and to protect democracy. Now, before we get deep into the lines of the article, let's ask ourselves one question. If we're going to protect an election, what is the mechanism afforded to us in our form of civil government to do that? And that is the rule of law. And so if we're going to protect the election, it would seem that the thing we would most want to be certain of is that the election was conducted according to the rule of law. But this particular election, because of COVID and because of the way that election laws were changed outside of constitutional boundaries, left the protection of the rule of law. And it was being orchestrated, in essence, in an environment of chaos. Now, if someone wanted to protect the integrity of the election, they would be working feverishly to bring the election back inside the boundaries of the rule of law so that everyone would be protected equally. What Molly Ball shows us is that there was a group of people, highly paid, well-funded, clearly they didn't come out of nowhere. Their details of their existence was to manipulate this election to get the result that they wanted and then cover up where they broke the rules and blame it on somebody else.
One of the things that was so clear to me, Dave, is that they do address the fact that one of their efforts, one of their guided efforts, was to change voter laws. What they never mention in the entire article, at least in my reading, is the fact that they did that without, like you said, outside of the rule of law. It was not done correctly. It was done actually illegally. And yet that little fact, which would seem to be a pretty important fact, was never mentioned. It was almost like, and you're so right, this whole thing is done in a way to make those that look, that were involved, to be doing such an honorable thing. And yet, at the same time, they're doing these things in a dishonorable, if you want to get right down to the definitions of honorable and dishonorable, it was being done in a dishonorable way, but yet it's being looked back at fondly as if they did it, and they did it out of the goodness of their love for our country and out of the goodness of wanting to preserve America, and they did these things. They did them illegally, but that's never mentioned.
That's a lot of discernment right there, Mike. And it shows me you did your homework and read the article more than once. Let me read from the article, which is sort of interesting because this stuck out quite boldly. Molly does what often I do when I'm writing newsletters to people. She makes a one-sentence paragraph. Of course, she's a Yale grad, and I'm not. But I was taught in journalism that a paragraph is not a sentence. But in this day and age, you get away with anything. So the sentence starts, and it's not a caption or a title. It says, in a way, Trump was right. Now, it continues. There was a conspiracy unfolding behind the scenes, one that curtailed the protests and coordinated the resistance from CEOs. Both surprises were the result of an informal alliance between left-wing activists and business titans. The pact was formalized in a terse little notice statement of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the AFCIO published on Election Day. So this is one of the places where she acknowledges the fact that this was a shadow campaign and that it was, in fact, a conspiracy. And she acknowledges that. She says that, you know, people are going to go crazy, but I'm going to use this. And then she sort of makes light of it as if to dismiss it. But the fact of the matter is, the story goes pretty much like this. There's a man out there who was the architect of all of this. And if we study the architect, we'll get to the reality. The architect of this is a man named Mike Podhauser, P-O-D-H-O-R-Z-E-R, Mike Podhauser. Now, Mike Podhauser has many different titles, and we don't know all of his revenue streams, but we do see his activities. Mike Podhauser today is listed as a senior advisor to the president of the AFL-CIO, which is the nation's largest union. He is also a data analyst. He was involved back in all of that data work that was done in 2000, 2004, 2008, and 2012 for Democrat presidential elections. He is the founder or co-chair of an organization called Catalyst, and it's spelled C-A-T-A-L-I-S-T. That's how you kind of get domain names these days. You change the spelling of words. Catalyst, which Molly calls the flagship progressive data company. And he's also one of the founders of the Analyst Institute. Now, Catalyst is an organization that received some of its initial funding and founding funding from George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
And when you study Catalyst, you not only need to know that connection, but you'll see very quickly that they are a for-profit corporation that exists solely for the data manipulation of Americans to be used and utilized by the progressive left and their candidates and parties. There is all kinds of words out there regarding Catalyst and the Analyst Institute, but at this stage in the game, the working operative number is that they have data on at least 240 million Americans. Now, about 280 million Americans are adults of potential voting age. So what they're basically telling you is they got almost everybody who could vote in their system. Now, they get everything they can get. You want to know how much data do they have on you? Everything that they can get. But they particularly focus on data based upon people who they think could or would or should be voting for their radical progressive candidates. And Mike Mike Podhauser is one of the key players, and he is the architect of what happened with Joe Biden. Now, let me fast forward this for you. You've got a person who works directly for the president of the AFL-CIO, now running a secret campaign, a shadow campaign, acknowledged by Time Magazine, a shadow campaign independent of the Democrat Party, outside the Democrat Party, inside the Democrat Party, and all around it, but they're doing it their own way. Now, the first thing when Joe Biden gets elected, one of the very first things he does is he shuts down the Keystone Pipeline, which costs thousands of AFL-CIO jobs. How is it that a person who directly reports to the president of the AFL-CIO goes out and gets a candidate elected who one of his first actions on day one costs the AFL-CIO jobs?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
I don't get it.
Me neither. Unless you really dig farther, and I'll save you hours, here's what the research will tell you. The AFL-CIO no longer works to represent its members. It works to represent the progressive agenda. And if the progressive agenda is the objective, members don't count anymore. These are not my words. If you study Mike Podhauser's bio on the AFL-CIO site, it will tell you that his goal is no longer to serve working union member families, but to serve all working families. They're no longer connected to the Democrat Party. They're an independent organization. In essence, the progressive agenda has hollowed out the union, the same way the progressive agenda has hollowed out the Democrat Party.
What you're suggesting is the union has been exactly what government is seen now to be. It's like its own interest. And the people, while government is intended to serve the people, and the people are really for the people, of the people, by the people, it's no longer that way. It's really just their own interests, and the people come way down the list, and that's what you're saying is true then about business.
And the unions which existed, and in fact, for Florida state election law, Ohio state election law, many states only permit unions to have their unique workaround on PAC laws and regulations regarding contributions and activities and campaigns, because the whole premise of the union is that they exist to serve their membership. right on the AFL-CIO's website, where Mike Potthauser is explained and his job is explained. He says that those are no longer the parameters. They're outside those boundaries now. They're working to talk about all families and basically working to gather the data on everyone they can to advance the progressive agenda. Now, and Potthauser works for organizations and founded organizations that were fundamentally funded by George Soros. So what we've got is a situation where this is not your mama's, your grandmama's union anymore. This is a giant database collecting machine that works in major national campaigns, bringing together all kinds of alliances to protect the progressive movement in America. Now, what is the progressive movement? That's the subject that we really have to comprehend and understand. If we don't get that part of it, then none of this makes any sense. So let's go back 100 years, Mike, to the founding of the progressive movement in the presidential administration of Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson was a college professor, a college president, and a governor, who then became president of the United States. He is viewed as the first real voice of in power of the progressive movement. And basically what Woodrow Wilson's worldview is this: the world has changed, the founding doesn't matter anymore, and the ideals and the principles of the founding must be upgraded and updated to modern times. They must be moved off of a theistic base of the Declaration of Independence and moved over to a progressive scientific base. In essence, an evolutionary model, a Darwinian model is the term that Wilson would have used. This actually happened in time and space, and a real American president at a point in time wrote articles saying it's time to divorce ourselves from the founding and move to the modern era. This is the root of the worldview of progressivism. And it's pivotal that we would understand that. Why? Because right now the war against conservative thought in America, in the Wall Street media and in academia, is that anyone who holds to the founding is either a right-wing extremist or a right-wing nationalist or a Christian nationalist, and is in essence an enemy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the state is defined by the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution, is a government of we the people. That's not the government of Woodrow Wilson and the progressive movement. The government is the administrative state. That's why when John Podesta, who is the leading progressive with the leading progressive organization in America, the Center for American Progress, issued his statement on Joe Biden's election, on the day of the election, he literally said, "We have elected a new federal administration," before he mentioned Biden's name. He did not say, "We have elected a new president." He said, "We have elected a new federal administration," because they believe in the administrative state. It is the power of the state that gives everything life to them, not the individual or the consent of the governed. The state is, and the state will always be, and whoever controls the state controls reality, and that's the sole objective, is to control the state. And this article in Time magazine shows precisely how the people who believe that moved in concert to win an election, breaking all the rules that were necessary, and even threatening violence, executing violence, and then threatening violence, and shaking down the Chamber of Commerce, the National Business Roundtable, and others, so that they would all line up behind and accept the results of the election without a single question, for fear that if they did not, that the progressives were going to burn the place down.
And I think many people did expect America to be burning that night. But I don't think anyone would have had what you've just laid out so clearly for us, an understanding of the whys behind all of this. I mean, we all know that there's differences in thoughts. You know, Dave, I can't believe how many times now in my adult life I've gone back to something I heard in college from Marshall McLuhan. I know we've talked about this before, a professor back in the 70s who, commenting upon what he saw the day coming with the American media, that it would no longer be a media that reports the news. It would be, as he said, a media that massages, or the media is the message or the massage.
Now the media creates the news.
That's right. They tell us what they want the news to be. And the media is a willing accomplice. I don't believe if all of these progressives that would be emerging in the countries, they wouldn't be nearly as effective without the willing accomplice of the American media.
Let's talk, Mike, about the objectives of this article, because I want to warn people. First, I pray that everyone who hears this will not only read this article, but they will humbly ask every friend they have to circulate a link to the article, that everyone possible, tenfold from those who are listening, a hundredfold from those who are listening today will read this article. Because if you read this article, you will begin to see how American politics really functions. And it's not your mama's Oldsmobile. Okay? This is a different world that we're in. This is a world of brutal human manipulation based on data. This is a world of narratives and secret political interests that have spent billions and billions of dollars to control the power of the administrative state. Now, why? Why do they want to control that power? Well, first off, when you divorce yourself from the God of the universe, as is the fundamental core of progressivism, moving from an atheistic platform to an atheistic, non-theistic platform, moving from a founding principle, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Moving from the platform of thought, the worldview of a personal creator who has made the individual, and therefore the individual is capable of making law and consenting to law, because the individual is that human individual and their conscience is given ultimate authority and value by God, to an administrative state where the state defines who the players are and the worth of every individual. So the state divides people up into tribal entities and then decides how to amass the power groups and who's on top, and they manipulate everybody else. There's a brutal difference between these two worldviews in practical life. And all you have to do is look at the 20th century, where America stood upon the theistic proposition of the Declaration and went through the wars of the end of the 20th century against totalitarian, godless regimes that were butchering tens of millions of people across Europe and then across Southeast Asia, and recognize that today, our worldview based upon these progressive leaders is no different than the godless equation that Stalin brought for 70 years to the Soviet Union.
Mm. Wow.
The Berlin Wall fell, Mike, but the ideas prevailed in the American heart.
Wow. On that one, we're going to have to think for a moment, because it's time for a quick break here, Dave. And we're going to just, my mind is exploding right now. I need that duct tape again, by the way, my friend. I need to wrap it around my brain, because I'm afraid my head is just blowing right off my neck. It's unbelievable. My guest today is Dave Zanotti. He is the president of the American Policy Roundtable and the host of The Public Square, heard right here on The Shepherd and heard all across the country. We're so honored to have Dave with us today. And we're talking about, in case you just tuned in and you're thinking, what are they discussing? We're talking about the new article that's out by Molly Ball. It's in Time magazine, called The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign That Saved the 2020 Election. My friends, this is an amazing article, one worthy of the kind of discussion and time we're giving it, and probably much more than that. We're going to be back with Dave Zanotti in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd. On the line with me today is Dave Zanotti. It's so great to have him here. Dave is heard every day on The Shepherd. I do mean 7 days a week, because there's a weekend version as well that we are so honored to play on the public. It's called The Public Square. We play it right here on The Shepherd. And Dave is a regular contributor to Afternoons with Mike. He's back today. We're talking about the Time magazine article by Molly Ball, called The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign. And Dave has just gone through at the end of segment one a masterful analysis of progressivism and the dangers of it and the goal of it. And this analogy that you've made is that our state today is no different than what it was in the fall of the Berlin Wall, of the all of the things that we thought we accomplished. There's nothing less than going on right now in this country than a coup. We studied coups in college. For those of you that have studied world history, you know that there was a coup. There are coup d'etats. There are bloody coups. There are other coups that just seemingly happen overnight. And we're in there. Is this one? Well, that's what we're talking about, because this is an attempt to reshape the thinking of not just progressives, but the thinking of all Americans. Is that too strong to say, Dave?
No, not at all, Mike. And I want to make a couple of quick disclaimers out of the profound respect we have for the listening audience, particularly, you know, we're talking to folks in Florida, and a lot of the folks in Florida either have moved to this state from other states and have brought with them their education, their background, their commercial experience. A lot of people are here in our country for the first time, and they're trying to figure all this out, and that can be extremely overwhelming. And I particularly want to speak to the people who are new citizens here in this country, who took a citizenship test based upon the Declaration and the Constitution. Now, they were told that these documents are the prevailing realities of what it means to be an American. You have to pass a test on those documents to become a citizen. But here we have an inner working of a political cabal that just captured the presidency, one of the most powerful rising movements in the history of this republic, that is dedicated to the proposition that the founding doesn't work and must be discarded. And we must have a statist, godless equation prevail upon the governance of this country. And anyone who disagrees with them, they call either an extreme nationalist or a right-wing nationalist or a Christian nationalist, as if to say they're somehow an enemy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how can the founders be enemies of the state unless you changed the state? Now, they haven't completed that change, but they're well on the way. And the 2020 election was a place in which they marshaled their forces and attempted to move the ball farther down the road. The story, and let me make one other disclaimer before we get back to the story, Mike. As I bring this information to you, please understand, I work for a not-for-profit organization that was founded as a mission to America 41 years ago. We do not have any corporate donation founder type people that are, we don't have a conservative George Soros paying our bills. There are times our people don't even get paychecks. We live day by day, month by month, and have for 41 years. We are supported completely by people who listen to these programs, who read our materials, who come to events, and who care about their country and want to see the founding vision of America not just restored, but completed. Because no one's saying America began perfect. America just began better than any other country in the history of humanity, because it began on the principles of the Judeo-Christian revelation of the scriptures. And that's why America has given us more form and freedom than any other country in the history of humanity, because it started right. Now, we've been trying to make it better ever since. So we're not talking about a perfect nation. We're talking about how to perfect a nation. And the other thing to understand is I'm a political independent. I am not a part of any political party. I do not believe in political parties. I agree with John Adams and George Washington, who said that political factions and parties could destroy this country. And right now, that is what's happening. But it's not the Democrats and the Republicans. It's basically the progressives versus everybody else. Now, to Molly's article, because you read it, you'll see not only did that happen, but you'll also see that there is what you thought were people who were conservatives aren't necessarily so. But here's how she defines her article in Time magazine. Quote, "This is the inside story of the conspiracy to save the 2020 election." Now, I take issue with that. because it wasn't to save the 2020 election. It was to save the results they wanted on that election.
That's exactly right.
Based on access to the group's inner workings, never before. So let me start again. This is the inside story of the conspiracy to save the election of 2020 based on access to the group's inner workings, never before seen documents, and interviews with dozens of those involved from across the political spectrum. It is the story of an unprecedented, creative, and determined campaign whose success also reveals how close the nation came to disaster. Quote, every attempt to interfere with the proper outcomes of the election was defeated, says Ian Bassin, co-founder of Project Democracy, a nonpartisan rule of law advocacy group. But it's massively important for the country to understand that it didn't happen accidentally. The system didn't work magically. Democracy is not self-executing. Those are quotes. Let me get a little bit farther. She said, then says, that's why the participants want the secret history of the 2020 election told, even though it sounds like a paranoid fever dream. A well-funded cabal of powerful people ranging across industries and ideologies working together behind the scenes to influence perceptions, change rules and laws, steer media coverage, and control the flow of information. They were not rigging the election, Molly says. They were fortifying it. Now, let me tell you what she just said. There was a well-orchestrated cabal, a well-funded cabal of powerful people ranging across industries, ideologies, working together behind the scenes to influence perceptions, change rules and laws, steer media coverage, and control the flow of information.
Wow.
They're admitting it, Mike.
Yeah.
Out loud.
They are. They're admitting it. They're, again, what the masterful part about this is that they're admitting it while masterfully shaping it. And that's the part you've got to, you know, as being a student of, I guess, just from my cheap seats position, a student of watching how the media spins things. I've watched this for years, but I don't think I've ever seen it done so effectively as what they're doing it right now. The spin zone that they are in is one of the biggest stadiums that I've ever seen in my lifetime. How in the world, how can they do this?
Let me put some definition. The cabal working to influence perceptions, that means controlling every image you possibly can see on a screen with their massive tech companies and their support with Facebook, who, by the way, had $300 million at least invested in this project. Change rules and laws, that means go around the constitutional requirements that only state legislatures can change state elections laws. To throw that rule of law completely out the window and to get whatever kind of laws you need to get the vote that you want. And steer media coverage. Well, clearly they were steering all forms of media coverage because they're all in it together. The Wall Street media is in it together. And control the flow of information. They acknowledge that they used the social media platforms in this article to shut down stories they didn't want out there. But she leaves one other thing out, that she admits in this article that the progressive left has a group of an armed force connected with Antifa and others that was specifically announcing on websites that if the election didn't go the way they wanted it, they were marching on Washington, D.C. with violence intended, period, end of discussion. They had the target list out. I know people in Washington who knew they had been targeted.
Mm.
Now, they called down and called their forces to stand down because they cut a deal with big business in America on the outcome of the election. Now, I'll let you read the article for yourself to get to that point. But here's the here's an important point we have to be aware of. Why is this article out? Well, Molly Ball tells us because these people want their story told. There's just one problem with this, Mike. There's names that are missing here. Big names. Names that could not possibly be missing by anything other than intent. So our research team has asked, what if this is actually an article that you might call chum? What if this is putting bait in the water to get conservative media to jump all over this story exhaust themselves by chasing it for years, when in reality, it's only part of what happened and the part they want you to see. For example, the name George Soros is never mentioned here, but George Soros is intimately involved in almost everything that happens in this article, either as a founder of so many of these organizations. Why is the relationship with the AFL-CIO not fully explained and exploited in this article, since the architect of this worked directly for the AFL-CIO and the president of the AFL-CIO? But then there's another name that's missing, John Podesta, the founder with George Soros of the Center for American Progress, the most influential public policy group in America, who has already moved several of their key players, their key employees, into the Biden administration, including now the chief of staff of the Biden administration, Ron Klain. Why is it that the state of Georgia is never mentioned in this article? Why is it that Stacey Abrams and the work that she did is never mentioned in this article? Why is it that the strategy to influence the four states that had to be changed in this election using vote changes in the urban centers of those states is never specifically mentioned in the methodologies of how that was done? And who paid for it? Why is it that the millions, the $50 million that Stacey Abrams received through many of the networks of the Center for American Progress and George Soros and John Podesta is never mentioned in this article? Is this article just bait to make you believe half the story and never get to the real story?
Well, there's enough here to almost throw people off. I mean, there's enough. You said it so well in segment one, Dave. This is a long article. I've read lots and lots of articles, and I have to tell you, this is an article that you can get bogged down on, and you're thinking, holy cow, and you look over at the little scroll bar at the right-hand side, and I'm a third way through, and I'm like, holy cow.
I don't have a whole day to read this.
I like what you said. It's a million words. I believe it.
Now, here's the bottom line, Mike. This article is designed to propagate despair. It's too complicated. It's too big for you to understand. These people have so much more money than you. You could never impact your government anymore. They're in charge. They're the smart ones. They saved your nation. They saved democracy. They saved your country. Just go back to work and pay your taxes. And by the way, you don't really have to vote anymore if you're a conservative, because you can't win anyhow. Because now America's changed.
Well, I started to say earlier that, you know, before the Georgia election, Chuck Schumer made a statement and he said, all we need to do now is wrap up those two Senate seats and we'll change the world. So that was in view, and I remember thinking, well, that's going to be easier said than done. Boy, was I wrong.
Yep, because of all of the inner workings that had gone, and because they succeeded in their voter suppression effort in Georgia. You see, they discouraged so many people from believing any longer that their vote would matter or their vote would count, that more than 100,000 people who voted in the presidential election for Republican candidates didn't show up and vote 2 weeks later, or excuse me, it would have been 2 months later, for the Senate candidates. They succeeded in voter suppression. The story behind all of this, behind the Time Magazine, Molly Ball, Atlantic, Soros, Podesta, all of these folks, it's designed for one purpose. If you're a conservative, give up. If you believe in the American founding, you're wrong. Surrender. We got it from here. Go back to work, pay your taxes, and don't bother voting for conservatives anymore, because they can't win, because we know how to beat them, because we're a lot bigger than you. This is a clear victory lap, in your face, voter suppression attempt. And I will tell you, the answer for God-fearing people is to first repent and pray. Because as onerous as all of this is, deceitful, deceptive, and despicable as it is, fundamentally and ideologically, what they're doing, they're permitted to do according, most of what they're doing, they're permitted to do according to law in the United States. They are working harder. They are working with more money. They are spending more money. They are buying and working their way to restructure this country. And the problem that we have is that most Americans who still believe in the Declaration of the Constitution are spectators watching these people basically reconstruct a nation and take every one of your rights away. And if we don't repent and we don't wake up and we don't take our liberty and our life with the value proposition that God designed them to be, then we are not only going to lose this country, but we're going to lose our lives.
You know, right now in my mind, Dave, a great story, a great book to read in the Old Testament is the book of Esther right now, because number one, there was a similar plot that Haman had, and the irony of the whole story of Haman and how he died is so playing into everything that's going on. But he thought he had everything done. He thought he had it all worked out, where one of the enemies to him was going to be was Mordecai. And he was going to have Mordecai, his life ended on the gallows. And it was all going according to plan until, Esther comes around. And it's just amazing to see how that then the Lord moved upon the king, and he can't sleep, and he reads his own writings. And from his own, basically his own diary, he reads the story of how Mordecai had done something wonderful, and the whole story reversed. And that's what, you know, we have hope because of God.
Well, that's true. And we talked to Dr. William B. Allen about all of this on the public square over the last couple of weeks. And we asked him, Dr. Allen, have we given up hope? And of course, the answer to that is no, never, because there's still a God who lives, who cares, and who cares about what happens in our lives. So no, we can never, ever, ever give up hope, nor should we ever, ever, ever think that violence is a means of anything. This is not a time for protest, friends. This is a time for repentance and service. Protest is right now largely a wasted effort. Don't waste your time making a sign. Don't waste your time making a march. Don't march. Take the time, energy, and money that you would have utilized to network with other people to find new candidates to run for public office who are going to be constitutionalists. That means a constitutional candidate for mayor in Orange County, a constitutional candidate for mayor in all of our state reps and state senate seats, constitutional candidates for the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. If the people of faith don't come out of the shadows, if we don't stop being saltless, lightless, under a bushel people, this entire enterprise and experiment of freedom based upon the personal creator disappears from the earth, because darkness is simply the absence of light. If we don't show up again, then these folks are going to prevail. And here's the thing. They won't have to fire a shot to do it because we hand it to them.
That's right. We let it happen again. It's going to be so sad to look back on that and realize that that's exactly what's happened. But at the end of the day, and speaking of at the end, we're at the end of this program already. It's hard for me to believe, but my goodness, at the end of the day, we serve a God of hope. We serve a God who's big. We serve a God who is strong and able, and he is not fearful of this title or this article. And I'm grateful for that. And Dave Zanotti, I can't tell you how much I respect you, how much I appreciate you, and the role that you play in helping educate all of us on these issues. Thank you for doing that. And we didn't even scratch, I know, your list of things we need to talk about. So we got to get you back on.
Well, we'll do that, Mike. I couldn't do it without a great team. We do it all together, and we couldn't do it without the support of wonderful stations like the Mark Radio Network and your program, and the folks who support us on the public square. So for more information, visit us at the public square. In the meantime, Mike, I'll come back anytime. We got a lot more to talk about. And thank you.
All right. Dave Zanotti, thank you so very much. Friends, thank you for being here. We'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.